Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Sometimes you don't have to go very far to have a good time. In fact, you may be able to find it right around the corner. St. Louis as a region has a long list and a wide variety of things to do and places to go that won't break the bank, are easy to get to and from, and that can help keep the kids and you from getting bored as the summer progresses. That's our subject today, some ideas for you and hopefully from you about summertime things to do. When it comes to compiling a list, one of our guests today has done just that. Amanda Doyle, the author of 100 Things to Do in St. Louis Before You Die, has now put out an updated and expanded version of a second book titled, Finally, a locally produced guidebook to St. Louis by and for St. Louisans, neighborhood by neighborhood. She joins me in studio. A little bit later, we'll hear from St. Louis Public Radio's arts and culture editor, Donna Carando, and from some other folks with some ideas about things to do. But we begin with Amanda Doyle. Amanda, nice to see you again.
Thanks for having me. It's fun to be here.
Well, as they say, it's bigger than better than ever now, your second edition of the guidebook. What kinds of things have you added to it?
Well, the first edition of this guidebook came out about 2.5 years ago. And it was exactly as the extremely long title implies, a roundup of sort of neighborhood gems in neighborhoods from around the entire region of St. Louis. It sold very well, and people in St. Louis, as you know, love St. Louis stuff. So the fact that people continued to buy it and continued to want to know that led us to talk, author and publisher, and say, well, if we're going to keep doing this, maybe we should make it current and relevant and updated. So we've added about 195 new entries, which are everything from restaurants to parks to cultural opportunities, all kinds of things. Most of them things that have opened in the interval since the first book was out. A few things that I just kind of missed the first time around that aren't necessarily new, but definitely deserve to be in the book. So it is a little bit bigger, and it's better because it's newer. So there you go.
How many total entries do you have in the book?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say probably upwards of 1,000, something around that.
With a lot of fun facts squeezed in between.
A little trivia, a little history. If there's something particularly architecturally interesting in a neighborhood, we try to put in a little flavor of each part of town.
You know, I get the impression, having read your introduction, that you discovered when you came to St. Louis that there are a lot of things that a lot of people here don't know, didn't know. And that as a result, you didn't know until you kind of serendipitously discovered them.
Right. I'm not from St. Louis originally, and people frequently tell me when I have a chance to talk about the book, well, I think that's what it takes. You can't be born in a place and sort of appreciate everything about it because it's sort of the air you breathe. You grow up around it. And it's true. I meet people now who say, you know, I mean, I've lived here for 47 years, but I'm going to go in the Arch or I'm going to go see Chuck Berry or something like that. And, you know, you just think, well, you've had a lot of opportunities. Are you going to get on that? So it is. It's kind of a way to encourage people to appreciate what's right here in our own area.
Yeah, that's something that happens all over. People don't really understand or appreciate sometimes what they have right around the corner,
sure.
as we have suggested.
Well, and it's in a way, it's sort of like the curse of being too accessible. You think you'll always get to it because it's right there. I could go do it anytime, and anytime turns into never sometimes.
Yeah. Well, obviously, you've got 1,000 things in the book. We can't talk about them all, but what are some of the more off-the-wall kind of things that you talk about?
Well, this is something that longtime St. Louisans may know about, although a lot of people maybe haven't done it. And it's not new, but it's something I missed the first time around, and I was pretty much chagrined the entire time until we could put it in. And that's Bob Cramer's Marionettes in the Central West End. So Bob Cramer is this guy who got really into puppets as a kid. Marionettes, you know, are the puppets on strings. So he and his partner, Doug, have an entire world they've created in this slightly dilapidated Central West End mansion. They handcraft these marionettes. It takes about 1,500 hours from start to finish. That's everything from starting with a drawing and an idea to finishing with a marionette that dances on stage. And they do these children's puppet shows in their theater, which is in this house. And it's so charming and weird all at the same time. They're very elaborate marionettes. A lot of the material and jokes haven't really been updated in about the past 30 or 40 years. So they're making a lot of jokes about Carol Channing. And there are kindergartners thinking, wow, I have no idea what's going on. But they're entranced because the puppets are so cool. So that's just one of those things that, again, I drove by it every day across from my son's daycare. And I thought, I wonder what that is. And turns out that's what it is.
I live in the Central West End, and I had no idea that this is probably right around the corner once again. But I have heard the name Bob Cramer's Marionettes since I was a kid, and that's a long time ago.
Right. I think they have perhaps done traveling shows in the past out at some of the parks and festivals and stuff, but they have their very own place. It's on Laclede, pretty close to Sarah. And it's just one of those things that, you know, someone finds out about it and goes, and then they're telling everyone they know, have you been to this crazy puppet theater?
Yeah. Obviously, you have all the obvious things in there. Mm-hmm. And there are many obvious things.
Sure.
But I find that most, when I open the book and just flip through the pages, what I'm seeing most of is food.
Well, that could be author bias. I don't know what to tell you about that. But I will say the kind of the idea in the introduction is that this is, excuse me, this is places you would take a friend visiting from out of town. And I think a lot of us, when people come in, we just want to go around the corner to a great restaurant, or we want to start the day at a coffee shop that's close to us and in our neighborhood. So there are quite a bit of restaurants, coffee shops, sweet shops, things like that. And again, food is kind of an entry point for a lot of people into neighborhoods. It gives them a reason to go there. And so if you've never been to Old North St. Louis, but you would go to Crown Candy and have a milkshake or a BLT. So it's kind of a way to get people in, and then you can start exploring other things around you.
You've also expanded geographically the area that you covered, have you not?
It's the same borders, but there are more things in the outlying areas that weren't in the first book, just because I've had more time since then to find some things. And we did add a few more day trips and things like that would be of interest to people.
And Metro East is certainly included in it. What are some of the things that you have included from our neighbors to the immediate east?
Well, one of the things that I like to do across the river is to go to some of the U-Pick farms that are available to folks over there. And those are great places you mentioned in the intro, taking kids, keeping them amused through the summer. So those are some good spots. The Metro East is booming as far as great restaurants. A lot of chefs are finding that they have maybe can make a bigger splash there because it's not quite as saturated as the immediate St. Louis market. So Cleveland Heath is a great example of a place in Edwardsville that's just people make the trip just to eat there. And there are a couple of things we added this time, some of the race car spots over in the Metro East as well, because I heard from people who read the first book and said, this is great, why aren't you talking about Tri-City Speedway? And I thought, well, because I didn't know about it. So yeah, we've added some things there as well.
You go neighborhood to neighborhood. Are there any neighborhoods that you can think of that have a greater opportunity for the kinds of things that you're writing about?
Well, there are definitely places that just have more dense areas. And I like to tell people to go to a place and if you can, park your car and get out and walk around, because that's where you're going to see the most. So anywhere that is sort of a denser, more walkable place. Central West End is a great example. Cherokee Limp area is a great example. Maplewood is a great example. There are plenty of finds all over the place. There are plenty of finds in St. Charles and Wentzville, but your chances are that you're going to have to get to them by car and not be able to easily get to something else, you know, just on your feet. So anywhere where there's kind of a compact neighborhood is a good place to look.
How about focus in your book on ethnicity, ethnic neighborhoods, of which we have many?
Definitely. Yeah, in fact, that's one of the things that I hope comes across when you read through kind of the listings. And another thing that we have in this book that we had in the prior edition as well is a little bit of history of some of the different neighborhoods. So we talk about the Hill, and it's not just the great restaurants on the Hill, which are, of course, great, but a little bit about, the soccer history of the Hill and the markets on the Hill and things like that. So there's all kinds of, and I'm sure I have barely touched the tip of the iceberg in terms of a lot of the ethnic neighborhoods that still abound now. Some of the more vibrant ones today, you know, that include the Bosnians and Vietnamese and other immigrants who have just made their mark on a lot of areas of town.
I'm sure you're well aware of the effort that the city is making to attract as many immigrants into this community as possible for economic purposes. Where they come, generally the economy is lifted.
Right. They start a lot of small businesses because it's something that they can do you know, themselves in a way, something they can start for themselves, and they have a built-in market of other people who have come from their same area. So it's definitely, it's a huge benefit to the entire region. For sure, the city is salivating to get them in. So
we're going to be talking in a few minutes with Anna Crosland of the International Institute about an event they have that attracts people who can learn a lot more about the various cultures in our community. In working on this edition of the book, what popped out at you as perhaps your biggest surprise?
Wow, biggest surprise. In general, my biggest surprise was how much new stuff there was. I knew, of course, the minute you commit anything to print, something is going to change. That's the nature of the beast. So I knew there were a couple of places that had either gone out of business or changed substantially. I thought I'd be updating some of those. 195 new places later, I was really, really amazed at how dynamic the area is. Just the number of things that change on an ongoing basis is pretty astonishing. And I think it speaks to that we have a healthy city and a healthy area, that many things are coming in.
Do you get the sense in doing the work that you do, the research that you do, that this is a city on the rebound? You know, a lot of people think of St. Louis as kind of lazy and lethargic and not having a lot going for it.
You know, it depends. I think it depends where you spend most of your time during the day, but I live, for example, in Tower Grove South, which is a neighborhood in the city just south of Tower Grove Park near Grand and Arsenal, if people are familiar perhaps with some of the international restaurants on South Grand. And we have people moving in all the time from out of town, from a lot of other places, who are constantly amazed at the sort of quality and variety of things available to them, at how cheap it is to live here. You know, they buy these houses that to me are like, wow, that's an expensive house. And they're thinking, this is such a deal. So it's hard to say overall, but I do get the sense that people coming here from other places, especially with things going on with Cortex and WashU and all the efforts they're making to bring in new jobs and these new kind of tech jobs, that there are sectors that definitely seem like they're really vigorous.
St. Louis has a rich religious history, if you will. Is that is that something that you address in the book?
Yeah, absolutely. I like to go and poke around churches, actually. It's something I think is really interesting. And I think you can learn a lot about a neighborhood by looking at the churches that are there, and maybe not necessarily what they are now, but what they've been. There are so many churches we have that have been one denomination or another that are changing as the communities around them change. So there's a lot in there. Everything from the Cathedral Basilica to St. Raymond's to lots of other houses of worship. So
it's a rich, rich history. There's no question about that. We're talking with Amanda Doyle, who is the author of the book with the long title, Finally, A Locally Produced Guidebook to St. Louis by and for St. Louisans Neighborhood by Neighborhood. We'll come back and continue our discussion with Amanda and also some other folks. And when we come back, we'll be talking with Anna Crosland of the International Institute, as advertised just a couple of moments ago. Stay with us, and we'd like to hear from you during the course of the program. Don't be shy about getting to us with your favorite places and things to do. Perhaps you can give us some ideas for Amanda's next edition, which is I think is going to be a never-ending process for you, Amanda, now that you've started. Let's hope. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation about summertime things to do in St. Louis with Amanda Doyle and others. I neglected a moment ago to give you our phone numbers if you'd like to participate with some of the things you like to do most in your favorite places. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air. Before we continue that conversation, though, these are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. The CEO of General Motors is getting pointed questions today at a Senate hearing chaired by Democrat Claire McCaskill of Missouri. The Senate Commerce Subcommittee on Consumer Protection is looking into how known defect remained hidden from the public for 11 years, that is, with General Motors. Illinois lawmakers are debating how to proceed with their investigation of Governor Pat Quinn's now-defunct anti-violence program. The Bipartisan Legislative Audit Commission is meeting today in Chicago. Federal prosecutors are also investigating. And teachers from across the St. Louis region are gathering at Washington University this week to learn how they can better weave STEM, or science, technology, engineering, and math, into their lesson plans. One focus of the two-week training will be making sure young women and minority students feel like they can have a career in science and technology. You can learn more about these and other stories this afternoon on 90.7 KWMU and throughout the day at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation about summertime things to do in St. Louis. Louis. Amanda Doyle is with me in studio. And joining us by phone now is Anna Crosland, president of the International Institute and director of the Festival of Nations, which will be taking place in Tower Grove Park. Anna, nice to have you with us.
Hi, Don.
I'd like to read you an email we got from Mary Beth Dormady. It's a long email. I'm editing it here, but she and her family did a lot of traveling as she was growing up. They live in Chicago. It says, coming home from the South and the West, it was the first place that looked like home. I'm now in my 50s, and my daughter lives in St. Louis. I return to St. Louis every year to go to the Muni, have dinner at Iron Barley, and dessert at Ted Drew's. Last year, we discovered the International Institute's Festival of Nations. What fun. I plan on returning this year. It's music to your ears, Anne, is it not?
Absolutely. It's wonderful to hear that kind of feedback.
Oh, it's such a wonderful event, and it's going to be held on the 23rd and 24th of August this year. Give me a sense, Anna, of the history of this event.
Well, you know, we have, this is probably the 14th or 15th year. When we moved down to South Grand Boulevard, the International Institute, in 1999, then following in 2000, we launched what we called that year June Fest, which then in 2001 became Festival of Nations. And it started out with maybe 3,000-4,000 people a year, and now it's up over 100,000. And so a lot of St. Louis's have heard about it. Once they hear about it and they come, they just return year after year after year. And so it's a wonderful experience to meet new people and also to see a lot of old friends.
Give us some sense, for those who are uninitiated to this event, some sense of what goes on.
Well, I think I would be remiss of me not to mention the 50 food booths, since on our exit surveys it says that 80% of the people come for the food. What I think is so remarkable, and there's only one or at most two per ethnicity, and so the variety is absolutely immense in terms of the kinds of food that are there. But it's not just things that you would have to come to South Grand to be able to eat, but it's some food that, in fact, there aren't even restaurants around. For instance, this year you can come and you can have Bhutanese food, or you can have Burmese food. It's a great way to experiment and buy a little piece here and there and taste something and see whether you like it and then come back for more. But in addition to the food, then we have gift booths galore. You can buy items in advance for presents or, you know, for birthdays or Christmases from all over the world. And we have four stages with ongoing entertainment. What is so exciting about the way I think that we plan the festival and our stages is that the four corners of the world are represented on each stage throughout the day. And so there isn't like a specialty stage that does one or another or features one area of the world. But you can sit down with your food in front of a stage, and you can see the whole world just kind of cycle in front of you.
How many different ethnicities are represented this year?
You know, in total ethnicities, there are generally between about 60 or 80 different ethnicities that are represented. There are craft booths, and then there are a lot of community organizations that really participate as well. And so you find that the St. Louis Language Immersion School, for instance, operates the children's arts and crafts area. We have sponsors. MasterCard comes out and works one of the drink booths on behalf of the festival. You know, there are a variety of all different levels of people who get engaged in, and the performances and the ethnic booths, the food booths, are generally operated by nonprofits in the community, by immigrant organizations that use the proceeds from the sale of the food booths, of the food in the booths, to be able to operate their organizations and their dance troupes all year long. And so this is really by St. Louisans for St. Louisans, and that's what it makes it really so special.
It's such a wonderful opportunity for young people, too, to learn about the various cultures around the world. Maybe their only real exposure during their young lifetimes to do this.
Yeah. Well, you know, in St. Louis, you know, if you look at the demographics, you find that as a region, we are less globally minded. We're less traveled. We're less ethnically diverse. And because of it, an experience like Festival of Nations is even more important, because it's like the world here in St. Louis when they might not otherwise have an opportunity to see it.
During my conversation earlier with Amanda Doyle, we talked about the interest that this community has in enticing immigrants to come to this community, and for largely economic reasons, others, of course, as well. But are you sensing, given your position with the International Institute, that this is beginning to take hold?
Absolutely. People in other cities are starting to hear about St. Louis and about our active ways of trying to welcome people here from many different cultures. You know, it's not that we've ever been off-putting or negative about immigrants here. It's just that we had a very small base, and when you have a very small base, it's hard to build it without being actively involved in it. And so the St. Louis Mosaic Project, in which the International Institute is a partner, are working very much on being able to tell the story of St. Louis as a really wonderful place to live. And, you know, you mentioned the economic opportunities of immigrants. They come from two different ways. One is they themselves are great entrepreneurs, and they're a source of new population to our region. But many of our native-born young people, 30% of millennials these days are non-white, and they want to grow up in communities that look like them and have activities that are special for them. So the value of the economic value, in fact, of immigration is beyond just what it offers to the immigrants themselves, but it's what it offers to our community as a whole.
Well, if our listeners want to get a taste, literally and figuratively, of the various cultures that we have in our community, they can do so on August 23rd and 24th at Tower Grove Park, a great setting, Anna Crosland, for your event.
Yeah. Yeah, and be sure to download the app. We have a free app at the iTunes Store and at the Android Store. If you download Festival of Nations, the 2013 one is up there now, but if you download that one, then what will happen is they'll send you the update notice when the 2014 one comes out. Everything's there, the food, the map, everything. And take the bus, take Metrolink there and avoid the parking problems.
Anna Crosland, thank you so much. I hope you have a wonderful event again this year. And thank you for being with us. We'll put that information, by the way, on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Thank you, Anna.
Bye-bye.
Amanda Doyle, what do you think?
I was going to say everyone could just move to my neighborhood and then you walk over. Even better. You don't have to get on the bus. No, it's a great event. One of the it's fun to take kids because you were saying there's so much food in the book as sort of an intro to neighborhoods. Well, I think food is kind of a gateway introduction here as well. You go and you see people walking around with coconuts that they're drinking out of. And my child's like, where did that coconut come from? And can I have one? And you just walk through the park and you'll hear music coming from the stages, and kids are naturally attracted to want to go see it. And it's one of my favorite events to take people to.
I remember when it was held out in Queenie Park, and that's
right.
A pretty big place. However, it outgrew that quite quickly. And again, as mentioned, what a wonderful setting, Tower Grove Park.
For sure.
How do the neighbors feel about the influx of visitors for this event?
You know, I have not actually heard complaints about that from most people. I mean, anyone who lives on one of the streets bordering the park, I think, realizes that you're facing a very popular public park, so you should park in the back that day.
Let's go to the phones. Carrie has been very patiently waiting. She's calling from Ladue and wants to get into our conversation. Again, I'll encourage others to give us a call at 382-8255 with some of your favorite things to do at summertime in St. Louis. But Carrie, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I have discovered a new little gem in St. Louis called Sweetology. And it is about a mile west of the Galleria. And it is this awesome kind of Willy Wonka meets do your own Build-A-Bear cake and cupcake decorating place. And so I have been taking my kids all summer and we've been having a ball.
Carrie, I want to come hang out with you if you're eating do your own cupcakes all summer. Sweetology is actually, this is the other peril of committing things to paper, a place that opened right after my print deadline. So it is not in the current edition, but I've heard really great things about it too. So your kids get like a baked good and they can just go crazy on it, right? Decorate it?
Yeah, we've been having a ball. I mean, you know, the 4th of July, we brought cupcakes to our party and the kids went in the day before and we made 24 decorated stars and stripes and, you know, fireworks and whatever. And actually today we're going over there because we have a birthday party and we're going to decorate a cake for a family birthday party tonight. So it's just really fun. And they have all the stuff there, piping bags and sugar art, and the kids' imaginations just go wild. And it's really quite fun. And the cake is delicious.
And you don't have to clean your kitchen afterwards.
And you don't have to clean your kitchen.
Genius.
<It's> brilliant.
And also important is finding things for the kids to do, because they do kind of wind down a little bit during the summer vacation and get bored.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people saying, is it time for school to start back yet? We got about another month, so we're getting into the dog days here.
I can't remember any friends of mine ever saying that. I was growing, but that's another story. Let's take another call from Rich calling from the Bevo neighborhood. Go ahead, Rich.
Hi, Don. Thanks for taking my call again.
Sure.
I'm just calling in to chime in an echo of civic boosterism. I walk in Tower Grove Park several times a week, and I'm always meeting people who've just moved into town, and I am always happy to point them out to whatever tourist attractions they have not seen and the neighborhoods to check out, and it's just St. Louis is a great place to live.
If you walk the park, I have to ask you if you have met the gentleman with the enormous Great Dane named Duchess. Do you know her?
Yes, I know Marty and Duchess.
Marty and Duchess. Well, that's now there's a neighborhood tidbit. If you are ever walking Tower Grove Park and you see a gentleman with a white beard and an enormous dog, friendly dog named Duchess, that you've discovered our neighborhood treasure, Marty and Duchess. So I'm glad to hear you've seen him out and about this summer.
Oh, yeah. I'm well, unfortunately, Marty's been ill recently, so you've not seen him
right.
Duchess out. But, yeah, you can. I'm also, if I may say so myself, quite distinct in the park in the fall and winter with my Harris Tweed Inverness cape and Deerstalker hat.
I'll keep an eye out for you, Rich.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd say thanks for the warning, Rich. I'm glad I know about it and just didn't run into you at dusk or something. Enjoy your park, and thanks for being with us.
Thanks.
Let's take one more call here, and then we'll talk about some music. Jerry and O'Fallon, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Good morning. Two places in the city I always take visitors to, and that would be the Venice Cafe and Blueberry Hill. They're both unique venues, and of course, go to Blueberry Hill, and it puts you right in the loop, one of the most unique neighborhoods anywhere I've ever seen. And if you get out a little bit, I can't think of a better thing than riding your bike on the Katy Trail and pulling up to the Augusta Brewing Company. Lots of outdoor seating. It's a great place to have lunch. There's enough to occupy kids. It's just a really nice setting a little bit further out.
Jerry, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
And he mentioned the loop, and of course, Joe Edwards did the foreword for your book.
He sure did, yes, because if anybody knows about neighborhoods and sort of building a sense of a neighborhood, I think Joe Edwards is at the top of the list. So he's a great person to have on board for sure.
You know, the call from Rich reminds me that St. Louis is a big town, but it's really a small town in many ways. I mean, here you are on the radio, and you're talking about a guy, about a common acquaintance in the park.
Right, a guy and his dog, exactly.
That is kind of neat. How much attention do you pay with the summer concert of St. Louis in your book?
Definitely, this is a music town, and it's a go out and see live local music kind of town. So I've got a lot of venues in there. You know, you can go in Soulard, just south of downtown, basically to BB's Jazz Blues and Soups 7 nights a week and see an amazing local band. They do occasionally have touring bands, but they're all about promoting local talent. You can go to Vintage Vinyl and find any kind of music that you're looking for anywhere. So this is, you know, it's part of our heritage that hopefully we will continue to promote and promote even more with the National Blues Museum planning to open soon. I'm hoping that'll be in the third edition. So it's definitely something people expect to know about in St. Louis.
You know, it's being promoted very well this summer, as is always the case here in St. Louis with the summer concert series. We have pay a lot of attention to that on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Lots of stuff going on. And we talked earlier this morning with Donna Carando, the arts and culture editor of St. Louis Public Radio, and talked about that concert series. And I began the conversation by pointing out, and she already knew this, of course, that St. Louis does have indeed a very rich tradition of summer and music.
One of the things that is part of that tradition is being able to take a picnic basket, some wine, if you choose, some beer, if you'd rather, and go to your neighborhood parks and hear really good music.
And if folks want to do that, they really have an excellent opportunity to find out what's going on right on our website.
Yes. Working with Brent Jones, who is our presentation editor, we put together as many of the neighborhood outdoor free concerts as we could find, and we will take more if we've missed any. We're happy to add to it, and we've put it together with a device that you can sort by location, by date. You can put your address in it if you noodle around with the app and find what concerts are within 5 miles, within 1 mile of where you live, so you can find the various neighborhoods and see what's out there.
It's one heck of a list. I mean, it's unending almost. There's just so many things going on.
We added two last week. I didn't know about Eckert's, which amazes me. And I stopped there and saw their list of concerts and put that on.
And peaches are in season right now.
Oh, are they ever?
A great place to go. There is a wide variety of the types of music that is available. Give us some sense of that variety.
Well, you've got jazz always at the Botanical Garden on Wednesday nights. You've got classical music at WashU in the quadrangle there. There's country music. You can find the tribute to Johnny Cash. You can find some of the really fun R&B groups. And so anything you want. Red Lear doing the old-time music from the Belleville group. And so it's young, old.
And these are not all well-known musical groups,
guess. Oh, yeah. No. And it's really interesting that as the groups become better known, they drop off the free concerts a little bit. A few years ago, you could find Kim Massey at a lot of places, and I don't see her on the free concerts as much anymore, although she's got a regular gig downtown. But it's just a good way, I think, for up-and-coming good musicians to get a start. And while it's free to the goer, to the person who's there, these neighborhood groups do pay them, and it's supported by the State Arts Council, and RAC brings in money. So it's not – we're not exploiting the musicians.
You know, I used to do some emceeing for the Mighty Mississippi Concert Band, which performed all over the area during the summertime. And there was nothing quite like seeing the families out there, kids getting their first exposure to some real music and real musicians, and doing just as you say, having that picnic. It was really old-fashioned.
And it's still, it's old-fashioned, but it's also very vibrant and very new. I live in the Lafayette Square area, and it's when the concert series starts, it's when all the neighbors see each other, and we catch up with what's gone on over the winter. And it's also, at least in my neighborhood, a great place for checking out the really strange dog breeds. There are more dogs around. And so you can bring your extended family, even the four-legged kind, to most of them.
And just watch out where you put that blanket.
Yeah, there is
as
that.
As a result of but one final question. Whatever happened to the Mississippi Festival over in Edwardsville that for so many summers was a mainstay? Do you have any idea?
I don't know why it ended, whether it was a university decision or if it just got – if Riverport made the difference. I don't know if there was an overlap.
But that was a giant version of the kind
huge.
Of thing you're talking about.
I mean, I can remember Gordon Lightfoot swallowing a bug in the middle of a set and Three Dog Night and Dolly Parton. I mean, it was really a fun place to see excellent music.
Top names. You mentioned swallowing a bug. I remember seeing Johnny Mathis over there, and I guess a mosquito flew into his throat as he was singing, and everything just had to stop for several minutes while he dealt with that emergency.
Well, chances are he made it through.
Yeah, he did indeed. He did better than the festival, apparently. Donna Caronda, thanks so much for being with us. We'll look at that website and keep track of the kinds of things we can be doing throughout the rest of the summer. It goes through August, does it not?
Yes, it does.
Donna Caronda, the arts and culture editor for St. Louis Public Radio. That website, by the way, is stlpublicradio.org. We'll be back to continue our conversation. Amanda Doyle, the author of Finally, a locally produced guidebook to St. Louis by and for St. Louisans, neighborhood by neighborhood. That is a mouthful. Amanda will be back. We'll have some other guests, too, and we'll take your calls at 382-8255. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation on summertime activities here in St. Louis. We're going to be talking about about a number of things, but I want to get back to Amanda here because you were mentioning off the air that you have pay a lot of attention to what you call niche museums in our area.
So we know of our great institutions you mentioned before that obviously the obvious things are in the books. We've got the Art Museum, the History Museum, even the Dog Museum is relatively mainstream and has been around quite a while. But we also have a wealth of sort of off-the-wall interest museums. One that I was really – this is not so much off-the-wall, but it is new since the last edition, and that's the Missouri Civil War Museum down at Jefferson Barracks. It is amazing to me that our area did not have a museum of this kind before this because of the pivotal role that St. Louis played and Missouri played in the Civil War. But this has really been a labor of love from the director and the staff down there. And it is well worth a trip to see. And if you've got artifacts and memorabilia, I think they're still taking it. A little bit more off the beaten path is the World Chess Hall of Fame in the Central West End, which is both a museum about chess and also kind of a working, I would call it like a working embassy for the chess. They're very interested in spreading chess, the reputation of chess and the game of chess to St. Louis and beyond. Pretty new in Grand Center is also the International Photography Hall of Fame, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's a place that gathers the best and the brightest in everything from documentary photography to journalistic photography to fine art photography, that kind of thing. And then if you do have kids who are driving you nuts and you have not yet been to the Museum, which is in Town and Country, it's an interactive hands-on kids museum. I think of it as sort of like what it would be like to try to recreate the Magic House in your garage. It's much nicer than most people's garage, but it's a low-slung set of buildings with a lot of really cool, somewhat homemade exhibits that that can teach you about science and all kinds of stuff. And kids really, really love it. And it's a change of pace for a lot of families.
I don't want to overwork this theme, but the fact of the matter is that finding things for kids to do during the summer is really something that parents have to do and want to do.
Right.
And your book is the perfect place to find things to do, such as you've just suggested.
Also, my bias. I have two kids, and I got to keep them busy or they'll take over. So,
yeah, you know, Amanda, food has been a recurring theme throughout our discussion, needless to say. And we're going to continue that now as we bring in Chris Shanahan, who was a volunteer with the Ferguson Farmers Market. That's a summer Saturday morning must for many people in that area and who come from far and wide to take part in what they're doing. Chris, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. We're glad you thought of us for the segment.
What makes your market so special?
Well, I'll tell you, our market's been around since 2002. One of the things that we pride ourselves on is really being able to work very closely with our farmers. Most of the farmers have their produce picked within 24 hours of bringing it to the market, and many of them are farming using some organic standards, although they may not have an organic designation according to the USDA. Most of them are pesticide free and using some natural farming techniques.
This whole concept really is catching on. I'm sure it's doing so around the rest of the country, but it's particularly here in our area.
Absolutely. I think there's a lot more attention being paid to what folks are eating, and as we discover that eating more healthy foods leads to a more healthy life, people are seeking out and coming to the market asking our farmers about how their food is produced and how it's grown. And even our vendors that are bringing meat products to the market, our customers are asking about, is the food antibiotic free? And those vendors are able to provide some pretty detailed information on their products.
Is this just a Saturday morning event and just during the summer, Chris?
Well, I'll tell you, it is just a Saturday morning event. We run 6 months in the summertime, and then starting in November, we're going to do Saturday mornings at St. Stephen's Church, also in Ferguson, once a month to continue providing for the community. And those markets are really a chance for people to get together during the winter, get out, get a hold of some produce that is available during the wintertime. And so, yeah, we do our best to try and provide for the community.
Amanda, I think, has a question.
Well, I was just going to say, Chris, as a frequent attendee of the Ferguson Farmers Market, one of my favorite things about it that I think is unique is how much you guys devote attention to having different themes each week, like pie eating contests and Kids Day at the market. That's something that I haven't seen a lot of other places. And I think it gives people, obviously people are coming to buy food every week, but it does give people a reason to kind of look ahead and want to come back every week because there's something a little different.
Well, you know, and I appreciate that you recognize that because that is something that's important. I think the farmers market really seems to be a focal point for people's Saturday mornings. I see a lot of families come out that look forward to hearing a specific band or, for example, this Sunday having an ice cream social, one of our local restaurants, Whistle Stop Cafe. is providing some of the ice cream for the ice cream social. You know, music provided by the Boeing Jazz Band this Saturday or next Saturday where we have a tomato festival. You know, we're coming in, tomatoes are just really starting to come into season. So, you know, inviting people to bring some homemade salsa for a salsa contest or a spaghetti sauce contest next Saturday. So, yeah, those are really important things that make it more than just a trip to the market. It's more of an event. We want people to look forward to their trip to the Ferguson Farmers Market every Saturday.
Chris, how are the tomatoes this year so far?
The tomatoes that we've seen are excellent. You know, the weather didn't cooperate so much in the spring, so things are coming in slowly. But the produce that's really coming in, the tomatoes, the peaches, we got our first batch of peaches from Camp's Peach Orchard last week. You know, everything is delicious, without a doubt.
Well, and the hours, once again, for your Saturday session?
You know, we open. We start letting people shop at 8 a.m., and we shut down right at noon every Saturday.
Well, I hope you have a good rest of the summer, Chris Shanahan, and thanks for being with us. The Ferguson Market, Farmers Market, is certainly one that is well-known in this community.
Well, we appreciate the opportunity. Thanks so much.
Hope you have a great Saturday this Saturday. It's Chris Shanahan, volunteer with the Ferguson Farmers Market. So you travel out to Ferguson from your Tower Grove neighborhood?
Absolutely. Ferguson is my home away from home. It's my it's like going to the country. No, I like Ferguson a lot. And the farmers market obviously is a great place to start. I have good friends who live there, too. And it's, you know, it's a great that's a great example of how you can get outside your own neighborhood and see something sort of just off your daily beaten path. And certainly people who live in Ferguson all the time come to my neighborhood and they're like, this is great. You have these restaurants. You have it. Sometimes it takes someone else's eyes on your own situation to give you a perspective as to what things you have right around you.
I mentioned the tomatoes because there's nothing better than a really good fresh tomato.
And they have been a little late in coming this year. I'm kind of champing at the bit, but
we've gotten some from friends in Illinois and they're just perfect. But
we're still on peaches at my house. We cannot get enough peaches.
Let's go back to the phones. Mike has been patiently waiting. He's calling from Webster Groves. Mike, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Don. And hi, Amanda.
Hi there.
Amanda, have you been to the Tavern of Fine Arts yet?
Yes, and I'm glad you mentioned that. Would you like to talk about it a little bit? I think it's fantastic.
Well, it's a spectacular music venue, no cover charge, really reasonable sandwiches and some exotic wine food and art. So it's a trilogy of art, music, and good food, and they have some of the best musicians St. Louis has to offer, even a name as famous as David Halen has played there on the free concert. And so it's just I just can't get enough of the place. And I didn't think they'd make it. Two college professors came up with the idea. And I thought, well, what do they know about running a restaurant, all the hard work it takes? And they've done just a phenomenal job.
It's in a space. It's on Belt. Am I correct on that?
Yes.
Okay, it's on Belt, kind of a little bit north of Forest Park. And, well, you're right. You know, that it's a little bit of an odd location that has gone through a couple of thing, so I see why you were skeptical. But it's a great place to see cabaret if you're interested in what St. Louis has in terms of cabaret music and that style of performance. That's a frequent theme night there. It's definitely a great find. Thanks for mentioning that.
Mike,
thank you.
Mike, thank you so much for the call. I have a tweet here from Robin Hirsch. Says, we asked folks to tell us some of the things I like best about summertime activities. And Robin writes, food, glorious food. And again, that's a recurring theme. But also, July 26th to September 11th, Art St. Louis free exhibit features 76 artworks about food by St. Louis area artists. Are you aware of that?
No, I wasn't. But if it's about food, I'm going to be interested for sure.
And of course, we've had a number of people get to us with regard to the custard that's available here on both sides of the river. Ted Drews isn't the only game in town.
You could have an entire show on the Civil War about custard. Yeah, no, Ted Drews, of course, is our famous custard far and wide, but there are many, many partisans. Chris mentioned Whistle Stop in Ferguson. That's a great place for frozen custard. In Maryville, Illinois, which coincidentally is where I go to get my taxes done. I don't know which came first, the custard or the tax guy, but there's a fabulous place called Bobby's Frozen Custard. And something that they do that I think is really neat is they have a Saturday and Sunday night concert series during the summer, and there will be hundreds of people there. I mean, they just, you know, they have this big sort of lot, and people bring their lawn chairs, and they set a band up on a stage, and people eat custard, so...
We had invited a representative from Bobby's to be on the program, but we couldn't work that out for whatever reason. But it is certainly well known and popular. You travel a lot. I mean, you go to Ferguson to buy your tomatoes. You go to Maryville, have your taxes done. Is the law after you or something?
No, I just have itchy feet. I don't like to stay at home because I know what's at home. No, I just, you know, life is short. There's a lot of things I like to do. But no, Bobby's is kind of it's an April 15th treat for me. It's not like I'm there every day, unfortunately.
Another tweet here from Beth Phillips writes, this is one of the obvious ones, Missouri Botanical Garden, a great place to go. But she also cites Food Truck Friday.
Food Truck Friday happens in Tower Grove Park, very close to the Botanical Garden. And it's not the only game in town in terms of this kind of event. Clayton also has Food Truck Sundays, I believe, now. And then some of the county parks have just sort of periodic events where they invite some of the explosion of food truck purveyors that we have in the region to come and all set up in one place. And it's sort of a festival atmosphere, too. It's, you know, you can come. There might be 15 to 30 different varieties of food trucks there. You get your dinner, sit out with your family and, you know, throw a frisbee around and eat spring rolls or whatever it is that you've gotten.
The food truck thing has really caught on as well. Boy, that's exploded.
It has exploded. It's kind of amazing.
One of the things I know you wanted to talk about also in the time we have left, which is a couple of minutes, are day trips.
Well, I will tell you, a great new one that we've added to the book that I hope people will consider is a trip to Warm Springs Ranch, which is in Boonville. So it's just north of Columbia, if you're familiar with that part of the state. And Warm Springs is where baby Clydesdales are born. So Anheuser-Busch realized, hey, we have these Clydesdales in our Super Bowl commercials and people go crazy for them. What if we made them available? You can go there. You can see this very state-of-the-art like breeding and pasture facility that they have. It's both very scientific and technical because they obviously are in the business of building good Clydesdales, but it's also really a beautiful part of our state. And you can go and just, I mean, who doesn't want to go see a baby Clydesdale? It's hard to resist.
Are they no longer available to be seen at Grant's Farm?
They are there, but I think they kind of bring in some to live at Grant's Farm. Warm Springs Ranch is where they're starting them all. So that's... It's where they come from. It's what I understood. I don't know if they get born on dates stamped on them or anything, but and you know, you can. There's also a guided tour there. You can look at all the regalia that the Clydesdale team wears when they go to parades and events, and just enjoy a day. And there's a Clydesdale themed souvenir shop there too.
I thought when you said you're talking about Boonville that maybe they had moved the whole operation because several years ago there was an incident in which some wacko was shooting.
Right, at Grant's Farm, right. Grant's Farm. You have to assume there was alcohol involved with that. I have no idea. But no, they do still have the Clydesdales at Grant's Farm. But I think Warm Springs has been where they have been doing all this, but they've just made it more available to the public. So,
any other day trip you want to was?
You know, Jefferson City. If you haven't been to Jeff City lately, it's obviously the state capital, and maybe kids have maybe you went there when you were in grade school for a civics class or something. But it's a great place to go. The Missouri State Penitentiary is reopened fully for tours if you want to scare anybody straight. Or a really cool part of town that I was unfamiliar with called Old Munichburg, which is on the south side of the city. It's basically an authentic historic German neighborhood with restaurants, shops, festivals, all sort of hearkening to the German heritage of the area.
All right. Well, we only have about a minute left, and your book is out, and I'll give the title once again in a moment. Is there anything that's come up since the book was published that you are unable to get in that you'd like to mention?
A million things. The only one I will mention, because I haven't been there yet, but I'm dying to, is a place in the Ville neighborhood in North St. Louis called Pimped Out Pickles, and they are selling flavored pickles in like 85 varieties. And you can bet that I'm going to have a flavored pickle before this summer is over.
You know, the entrepreneurial spirit is alive and well. What is the name of it again?
Pimped Out Pickles. And I mean, they have fruit punch pickles. There are savory varieties. I hope they appreciate how much I'm talking about them, because I need to go and get a pickle.
Well, it sounds great. And obviously, you're already thinking about the next edition. The book, Amanda Doyle's book, is, and the title is a long one, Finally, a Locally Produced Guidebook to St. Louis by and for St. Louisans, Neighborhood by Neighborhood. If you're looking for something to do, you'll find it in Amanda's book. Amanda, thanks so much for being with us. Congratulations on the new edition, and good luck with the sales of this book.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
That's Amanda Doyle. We thank all our other guests, too, for being with us as well. And we'll ask you to join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape, when he'll talk about the Stage of St. Louis production of How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. Start a pickle thing, right? That's one way to do it. And also, he'll be talking about the Contemporary Art Museum's St. Louis Evenings of Internet Cat Videos, believe it or not, and the Codner Gallery's exhibit, Modernism, Art, and Design. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about the pros and cons of decriminalizing marijuana, as well as its medical uses. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, with production assistance from Erica Smith, Aaron Dorr, Kyle Jacoby, Amanda Huntingfort, Cullen Riley Duffy, and Spencer Reed. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.